Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, September the 3rd, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, and today we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 3, the second paragraph, My Drinking Assumes, and we will be reading and studying that one paragraph only. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Donna G., The 12 Traditions, Margaret N., and the readers of the text are Julie E. B., Leslie M., and Robin P. The share ID for Wednesday, September the 2nd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, is 15,267. And for this morning's meeting, Thursday, September the 3rd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 15,273. Our newcomer greeter is Kaylee R. An announcement person is Robin B. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Donna G. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Donna G., recovered in Pennsylvania. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Well, thank you, Donna G., for getting us started and the 12 traditions. Margaret N.
Good morning, everybody. This is Margaret N., and I am a gutter drunk variety of a compulsive overeater. I've been living in recovery for the past 71 days in Loomis, California. So, the 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous, excuse me, should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for the opportunity to serve, my past.
Well, thank you, Margaret N. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. And once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 3 of Bill's story, the second paragraph down, My Drinking Assumes. And I will now ask Julie E.B. to get us started. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. The remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of these scrapes. Out of those scrapes. Well, it's interesting. The last time I was a reader on the meeting, every word really described me and where I was at. And once again, once I learned that Bill's story really wasn't about the life of someone in the 30s, that Bill's story was really about me. That it was my job to learn to identify in to each of the pieces in Bill's story, it all began to make sense. My drinking did continue to grow. One of the things in Bill's story that strikes me is how he just almost casually mentions it. He's narrating the destruction of his life, piece by piece, brick by brick. Now he's lost those friends. Now he's a lone wolf, which means, I don't know if you know, but lone wolves are not happy creatures. They're very defensive, snappy. And this was me, defensive, snappy, friends that would say normal things or might look at me another way. Well, I just stopped even being able to be social in restaurants and would leave my serious eating for time at home, night and day, I used to, I was on call last night, woke up, just went back to sleep. But what used to happen is I'd wake up, pump myself up with Diet Coke, do my job, snappy because of how caffeine affects me, and then come back and eat as much as I could to brown out and go back to sleep. If you had told me I could go from the time I went to sleep till morning, even if it was out 2, 3, 4, sometimes all night, different occasions for 2 or 3 hours, with no change in my food, no need to eat, I would have told you you were a liar. And so I just pulled away from all my friends. I don't even know how many of them had those remonstrances, but I knew. I knew, and I was no longer able to have the facade of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and pretend everything was okay. And as for my husband, no, there was no infidelity for me, but, and yet, there was loyalty, but also I blamed him for all my troubles in my food. And I also pulled away and offered him very little or nothing. I was unfaithful in the sense that food was everything to me, and self-will was everything to me, doing things my way. And if he couldn't be like me and on agenda with everything I needed to see outside in the world to feel safe and secure, then, well, I was faithful just to my way. And it was terrorizing. We have a happy marriage today. So there is hope for all of us. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Julie E.B., for getting us started. And I will take names of those who would like to share. But before I do that, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Who would like to share?
Donna B.
Arlene B.
Irene B.
Arlene B.
Oh, Arlene. Sorry. Who was after Arlene?
Judy H.
Donna B.
I got you, Donna B.
Thank you, ma'am.
Judy H.
Got you, Judy.
Donna B.
Thank you.
Say that again.
Lynn F. and the Olympic Peninsula.
Got you, Lynn F. So I have Donna B., Arlene B., Judy H., Lynn F.
Donna G.
Donna G. Got another Donna. Well, it's spelled differently. Okay. One more? Anybody else? Okie dokie. I'll go with those. I have Donna B., spelled D-A-N-A, Arlene B., Judy H., Lynn F., and Donna G., spelled D-O-N-N-A. Okay, Donna B., you're first.
Thank you, Mo. This is Donna B., spelled D-A-N-A, but pronounced Donna, from Denver, Colorado. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic. In fact, today I am celebrating 2 years of adhering to my food plan without exception, which was an absolute miracle that I have abstained from volume eating. And I'm very grateful for that. What jumps out for me is there were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. And I think that captures for me, especially in the world of eating disorders, the dichotomy that exists between what appears to be luxurious on the outside is actually painful and decrepit and falling apart on the inside. Prior to recovery, there was no linear relationship between what my outside looked like and what my insides actually felt like. There were times in which I was at my thinnest and my best dressed and my seemingly most popular with others and wanting to die on the inside and barely being able to keep it together because of the disruption that restricting and bulimia and pills and compulsive exercising had on my life. Today, I feel that the outside of the apartment, which is my body, and the inside rooms, which is my experience, strength, and hope, align with greater authenticity and transparency. And with that, I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Donna B. Arlene B., followed by Judy H. Good morning, Arlene.
Good morning. This is Arlene B. from Coconut Creek, Florida. Second time I'm sharing, but I've been listening for months. What I identify with in this paragraph is how Bill had so much around him that were objects of his outward success. And during my disease, I mean, I had an apartment in Gramercy Park. I had a good job. I had, lovely furnishings. Of course, everything was on credit, which I eventually failed to pay. I didn't keep friends very long. And I was very moody and sensitive and hypersensitive, as addicts are. And I used to, it used to amaze me how people kept friends from the second grade. I mean, all of my acquaintances, and I'll say acquaintances, were short-term at best. Eventually, I would have a blow-up with them, usually from some act of disloyalty on my part. And I wasn't disloyal to any relationship because I couldn't maintain any intimacy in terms of the opposite sex. I stayed single until I was well into recovery in my 60s. So, you know, I led most of my life as a lone wolf. And, who could be in the company of others and binge the way I wanted to? Unless, of course, I was with a binge buddy. But even then, I would curtail myself. So I very much see my life in parallel with Bill's. I drank and ate to excess. And my life eventually fell in shambles around me. And it took me so many years to get back to a somewhat normal life. So I'm so happy I could share about this and hear all of you every day. And I thank you for letting me share. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Arlene B. Judy H., followed by Lynn F. Good morning, Judy.
Hi, my name is Judy. I'm a compulsive overeater. I live in New Jersey. And I've been part of this program for about 40 years. And I am maintaining an 85-pound weight loss. And I just want to say that I had no idea what it would be like when I entered the rooms for the first time. I remember there were about 40 people in the room in Brooklyn Heights. And one woman said, "Can't any of you stop?" People were drinking, chewing gum, sucking a candy, whatever. And I realized, no, we can stop. At times, well, we can stop. But the first sentence of that paragraph said, "My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day, almost every night." I wouldn't say it was every day, but I was up to almost a volume eating, 10,000 calories within 2 or 3 hours. And then I would go to sleep, and it would be so hard to wake up the next day and promising myself I would never do this again. But OA has taught me a different way of life, and doing some of the steps, step 4 in particular, looking at my defects of character, and my very first step 4 was on a little index card. That was the best I could do. And over the years, I was able to do more and more. And I'm just so grateful to OA. It's taught me a different way of living. I say my little prayer every morning, turning my life and will over to the care of God. Again, I still have fears. I still have to work on it and trust. And I'm very grateful for all of you during this time, people from Washington, Georgia, New Jersey, the islands. Just so happy that we're all connected during this difficult time. And thank you to all of you OAers, and have a wonderful day. I pass.
Thank you, Judy H. Lynn F., followed by Donna G. Good morning, Lynn.
Hi, this is Lynn from the Olympic Peninsula. Boy, my heart is pounding. This is my first share. I've been listening for over a year. I've gone through the steps with a Vision for You sponsor. I have 6 months of abstinence, but speaking out loud in front of whatever this is, 300, 400 people is terrifying. So anyway, I just said a prayer, and here I go. So I am so thankful for a Vision for You. I'm so thankful for the focus on figuring out what your alcoholic foods are and removing them from your diet, because I didn't know how to get out of the situation I was in. I had gained over 100 pounds and was eating nearly continuously, especially at night. I could not stop the nighttime eating. I never thought I would stop the nighttime eating, but with the grace of God in this program, I have done it and successfully done it for 6 months now. And finding my right-sized body, my right-sized mind again, and it is just so fantastic. And I didn't time myself, so I'm just going to call that good for my first share. Thank you so much, everyone.
All right. Well, thank you, Lynn, and thank you for stepping into your fear and getting on the line. And after Donna G., let me remind everybody where we are. We're on page 3, the second paragraph, My Drinking Assumes, and we're just studying that one paragraph only. After Donna, we will take some more names. I will. Thank you, Donna. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Donna G., grateful to be recovered compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania by God's grace. Talk about depth. This paragraph, I just can't get over how much depth and how much is in it, and I just felt that I wanted to share. It's so full of things that I can relate to. The serious, you know, and I used to hate when people would, I don't know why. Well, I just hated a lot of things, but when people would look up definitions, I know what serious means, but for some reason I looked it up. I felt there was going to be even more because there's so much depth here. I thought there'd be more depth, and there was. One of the definitions, the first one I saw, was demanding careful consideration or application, demanding careful consideration. So my drinking, not my drinking, but my the equivalent of drinking, my eating assumed proportions that demanded careful consideration. But the problem with me was what most people considered careful consideration about outgrowing their clothes, getting bigger and bigger, putting on weight, did not bother me. It did not demand my careful consideration. The remonstrances, and I'll be honest, I didn't know what that word meant, so I kind of could guess, but I looked it up, and it's a forceful, disappointing protest. The protests that I got, they weren't from friends. They weren't gonna say anything, but from my mother mostly, and the protest had to do with the weight, the way I looked. You know, you're such a pretty girl. If you would just lose some weight, well, that didn't matter to me. So it didn't demand my careful consideration. And I always say, I'll use the word grateful to describe myself as an overeater. And the reason is my higher power, who is God, knew that the only thing that would get my careful consideration was my health. And so he gave me a disease as a result of this, because I would have kept going. I mean, it didn't matter to me what I looked like. I was fine being a lone wolf. In fact, I liked being a lone wolf. I was independent. A single mom doing it all herself. I'll work two jobs. I'll work three jobs. I'll do whatever I have to do to prove that I can do this by myself. And so, you know, there was no motivation. Why do you want to look good? I don't want a man. That works for me. I don't want a man. So the weight kind of helped me in a little bit, you know, a little bit. So, there's so much in this. And I watched the Bill W. story, the movie recently, and the unhappy scenes. Oh, how sad and lonely Lois was. And, you know, those were my kids. Those were my children, because, you know, this disease, you know, a lot of unhappy scenes. I was always angry, you know, always they weren't doing things perfectly. I'm moving soon and I'm finding a lot of letters from them that are sorries and apologies, and why I kept them is really kind of telling in itself. But, you know, they were always trying to please me. Just so much here. And I guess I just want to end by saying, if you're a newcomer, claim your seat. You belong here. You're no longer a lone wolf. So that's it. I pass.
Well, thank you, Donna G. And before I take names of people who'd like to share, we do value your experience, but we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience. So if you shared in the last 2 days, please let others share. I'm now open for taking names.
Evan
Melanie
U.
G.
Evan,
Nancy L.
Evan U.
Melissa
J.R. Melanie.
Yeah. Thank
Melanie.
You.
Carol H.
Jody.
Carol H. Did I hear Jody?
Yes, Jody E.
Jody
Nancy
E.
L.
Nancy L. Anyone else? All right, we'll stop there. We have Evan U., Melanie C., Carol, I think it was H., I'm not sure, Carol, you'll help me out, Jody E., and Nancy L. Evan U., please get us started.
Hi, everyone. Good morning.
Star one to mute. Thank you, Evan.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. This is Evan from sunny Southern California. Mo, thanks for your service and for everybody making this meeting possible. The thing that really jumped out for me is lone wolf. You know, I'm a very amiable fellow. I get along with everybody. I have a sparkling personality. But, and few people would believe that I'm a lone wolf, but in my own internal life, I am, you know, I'm not able to make friends easily and hold on to friendships. Somebody mentioned people who have friends from the second grade. I'm mystified by that. You know, my self-hatred, and then this is a disease of self-hatred for me, and food is how I medicated and solved the problem of self-hatred. And I with that self-hatred, I projected onto others, and so I'm judgmental. And I just keep my distance from everybody. You know, I can have a conversation with anybody, but I don't develop those close ties. You know, and that's what I'm recovering from. I have a mental illness, a problem between my ears, and I have a spiritual sickness. And you know, I'm here this time around, you know, and certainly my food assumed more serious proportions. It's been a while since that's been true. You know, the food hasn't in the last 6-7 years, you know, there were times where I would eat dinner at 10 o'clock at night, and then at 2 o'clock at night I would go out and I would get chocolate shakes and cheeseburgers and all sorts of things like that. My food was an absolute nightmare. But this time around, coming through, learning about visions and working the steps, it's the food is not as loud, but walking through the four step and dealing with all this internal stuff has been so intense. And it became the sort of sickness underneath became the thing that is really loud. And I did this big group several months ago in which I was you know, in this great situation, you know, great in my lean as could be and my life going well. And as things started to unravel, all my judgment and all my self-hatred and my projecting out on others just really caused me to push away from everybody. And, you know, a reminder of the line in an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. You know, and that's what I'm recovering from, is the deep belief that I'm an unlovely creature, and using the steps to heal the thing that's underneath, the thing that caused the eating. So thank you all for being here. I didn't want to share because, you know, I'm a lone wolf, but so I'm just speaking up. Thanks for you all being here.
Well, thank you, Evan. You, thank you for speaking up. Melanie C., followed by Carol, I think it's H. Melanie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm in Oregon. This is a really, really wonderful piece so that I can just, you know, pan my entire life previous to getting a treatment for this disease of compulsive overeating. And the night before the day that I called OA is very clear in my mind and leaves a lump on my throat because it was an awful, awful, awful thing to look at. I was sitting in a Lazy Boy recliner and I had a laptop on my lap, 300 pounds. I don't think that I'd bathed in a few weeks by then, 300 pounds, and I'd been grazing, eating. I think it was about 2 a.m. because I wasn't sleeping very much anymore either. I had a couple of kids. I was raising my brother's children along with my husband's support, clearly, and they were in the other room. We had been empty nested, and in the house was just a wreck, an absolute wreck. My husband was on the East Coast because that's where his client base was at. And I was not keeping it together at home. And I was on that computer. I was doing things like, somebody help me, send. Going into that, you know, Ask Jeeves one. I don't know if any of you remember that. How am I going to get out of this, send? And I was just crying. And I was stuffing food in my mouth. And I swear to God, I could feel it in the back of my throat. I had not stopped eating. I was a graze binger by then, almost 300 pounds and climbing. People in my family were up to 450, 500. And so I was going there, absolutely going there. And I was sure that it was mental illness, and I was too afraid to kill myself. I tried that several times, and I just wanted to stab myself in the eye. And I couldn't stand it anymore. Couldn't stand it anymore. This is where this disease had gotten to serious, serious proportions, the amount that I was eating. And it wasn't wiping it away, and I didn't have any kind of presence of mind to say, Melanie, this isn't working, and I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. And that's the night before the morning when the dawn was going to break and somebody was going to be on the... Oh, wait a minute, I wanted to tell you. I actually, in fact, dialed that night a psychic line at $60 a minute. Dialed that psychic line. Oh my gosh, I hadn't thought about that in a long, long time. To beg them, what was my future going to be like? I'd gotten to that kind of delusional thinking that they could tell me what was going to happen for me, and they didn't help. And I got the phone bill. Oh, my gosh, that was a shock. But I love to look at this particular line this way, and I got to get out of here. I've only have a few seconds. The remonstrances that I was able to read, Donna, was that they were reproofs, reprimands of my behavior, and I got some of those, absolutely. And I like to say friends terminated in a row, then in a row, because I was picking them off. I had nobody, nowhere, no how in my home. It was a miracle that my husband would come home anymore. It was just an atrocity. Just a horrible, horrible scene, if you can envision that. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Melanie. C. Okay, Carol. H. Is I got it right?
You did.
Okay.
Good morning,
Mo.
It's so nice to hear you.
This is
Carol H. calling from Northern Colorado. And I am the lone wolf who never speaks on this meeting but listens all the time. I seldom speak. I always just love to hear the wisdom of others and somehow think mine isn't worth anything. And I know that's being very selfish. And I loved what the reader, started with today, saying, you know, reading these stories about Bill, you know, in the 30s and being a drunk man. And I, you know, can't relate to that. Reading the big book early on in program for me, I just, you know, I'd read the words, but nothing ever really, you know, spoke to me. And now, you know, hearing so many fellows share what this reading means to them, and it's like, yeah, the progression of the disease. You know, I had this disease when I was a young child, and it progressed up and down and all around through my, you know, teens and early 20s and my 30s. And finally, when I was 40 and starting to figure out that, you know, I did not have this together, that I could not fight this disease by myself. I was definitely a lone wolf. And, you know, I didn't want you to really know me because I hid so much of this disease. My body didn't hide it very well, that's for sure. But, you know, I let you believe that I had it together, and I did not. And the progression for me that brought me in the rooms was the mental obsession, the craziness in the head that so many other people say is the same. And just being the lone wolf and not being self-sufficient, being independent. I heard those words earlier. And thinking that it was my job to figure this whole thing out. And now knowing that I can't be a lone wolf, I have to be on these calls. I have to be in my home meetings, my face-to-face meetings, which are not face-to-face, of course, but and doing service and talking to people. Maybe I don't speak on this line much, but, you know, I do talk to people and try to make my outreach and work with others. But, you know, it cannot stop. Otherwise, the disease will continue to progress. It's still living inside me. I can tell you that for sure. But, you know, gratefully today, I can be recovered from it, not cured. So always good to hear you all on this meeting. And I'm grateful to share today. I pass.
Well, thank you, Carol H. Jody E., followed by Nancy L., and we may have time for a few more shares after that. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your service, those of you who made this meeting possible. And thank you to those who are on the line. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. So my bottom was relatively high as concerns the food and the weight gain. But when I first picked up this book in 1988, I could relate instantly with the alcoholic because I do have this allergy of the body and this obsession of the mind. At times, my eating did continue all day and certainly every night. I did become a lone wolf, even in my own home, with my husband and my daughter, especially concerning my husband. I would wait until he went to sleep at night, and then I would get up and go to the kitchen and start eating. And occasionally he would wake up and come downstairs into the kitchen and give me this look of disgust and anger. And I was powerless over the food. When I would become abstinent during this time, because I did not thoroughly work the steps, I was unfaithful to my husband. I would substitute the compulsive eating, my sexual addiction would kick in when I would get abstinent. And because I wasn't working the steps, that substitute compulsion and disease kicked in. So I was unfaithful to my husband, for which I'm very ashamed. But I share that in hopes that someone else might know that they're not alone, and that an abstinence alone is not the solution. I have got to work these steps, these 12 steps, lest I become a stark raving abstinent. So grateful that I found this big book study that has helped me to really work these 12 steps and to actually recover. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Jody E. Nancy L., and we'll have time for maybe a few more shares after Nancy. Good morning, Nancy.
Oh, good morning, Mel. Thank you for your service and your strength that comes through the lines to me, that's for sure. I'm Nancy, recovered in Arizona, recovered compulsive overeater. I used to always be so, and sometimes even today, I'm just envious of people that are getting together with their high school graduates, you know, or their high school friends, and, you know, we're all in our 70s now, and I'm like, wow, you know, that's just so unfair. Really, you know, I used to make friends. I was really, really good about making them, like I was really good about starting diets. But then after a while, my critical attitude, or maybe, you know, I would leave them or maybe they'd leave me because I was so very bossy, had to have my way all the time. And so I got kind of a standing joke here. It's like, oh, well, I can say that I have a friend. I mean, she's been my friend for 55 years. Isn't that great? Yeah, she's also my sister-in-law, for Pete's sake. So anyway, this is an awesome meeting, and I'm learning. I'm going to start today cultivating relationships one at a time without being pushy. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Nancy L. And we have time for maybe two or three more shares. So if you haven't shared in the last 2 days, please let others share. But give me your voice. Give me your name.
From Minnesota.
What was that?
Colleen from Minnesota.
Charlene?
Colleen.
Colleen. Okay, sorry, Colleen.
Patty T.
Tennessee.
From Kentucky.
I got Patty T. And then who was the person after Patty?
Roxy from Kentucky.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I heard of Rob. Rob?
Yep, Rob H.
Rob H. All right, let's go with those three. Sorry about the others. Maybe get on the line tomorrow. Okay, Colleen.
Thank you.
Is it Colleen T?
Correct.
Okay, Colleen, you're up. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Colleen T from Minnesota, a compulsive overeater. I want to thank the people that have reached out to me this week that I haven't reached back. It's not that I don't appreciate that you reached out to me. I'm not completely new to Overeaters Anonymous. I met my best friend at an OA meeting 40 years ago. I just got back on to Overeaters Anonymous. I know it's a great program, and I needed it. I need you. I'm also kind of a lone wolf. People just have to look at me and know that I have, you know, gained weight. I've lost and gained weight for many years. It's my life story. And I also, people will say, oh, you have such a pretty face. And then they look at your body and say, oh, what happened to you? You know, but I just needed the support of you people, and I can't say enough of how your sharing has helped. I know the 12 steps work if you work them. I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for being there. And with that, I'll end because I'll start crying if I continue. Thank you.
That's all right. Thank you, Colleen. We'll hold you up if you cry. Patty T, you're up, followed by Rob H. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, Mo. Thank you so much for your service, and what a great meeting this has been today. So I just wanted to point out a couple of things. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. My eating continued from the time I was a small child until it was all day and every night by the time I was in these rooms. The remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row. I didn't allow myself to have friends. I had already gotten the message due to my skewed mindset that the closer people got to me, the more unacceptable I was, right? So, you know, I would see people get frustrated with me or angry with me and assume, you know, in my mind, rightfully, that I was no one to be loved or intimate with. So that right there made me become a lone wolf by the time I was an adult. And it continued. You know, I kept myself out of relationships. I kept myself at tentative arm's length friendships. Superficial was my middle name. I wanted everything superficial. And then when it talks about unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment, well, you know what? I didn't have unhappy scenes in my sumptuous apartment because I couldn't stop buying food long enough to buy anything lovely. Like, I made a great salary, but I spent it all on food to the point that I ate myself to bankruptcy. I literally went $40,000 into debt due to the amount of food I was purchasing on a daily basis and eating. And so there was no one else in my life. I you know, it was just me, myself, and I, and there you go. There's the disease right there. And no real infidelity, and as I've said, you know, no relationship, sexual or otherwise. And, you know, the bottom line is that it took me until I was 51 years old to become willing to walk into these rooms. And then it took me another 8 or 9 years to actually become abstinent in a way that I can read this big book and relate to it as an addict. You know, my father's daughter. And I'll pass. Thank
you. All right. Thank you, Patty T. The dog interrupts. All right. Rob H., you may be our last share. Good morning, Rob.
Okay. Thanks, Mo. It's Rob H., Rock State, New York. I'm outside walking at the moment. I heard the word remonstrances. I looked that up as well. Don't know that I can share anything about that, but what comes to my mind is the lone wolf, and I heard people talk about relationships, and I know that my part of my issues, I went to school away from home, and I got a student loan, and I just spent money, you know, all on, a lot on food. Like, I took out a separate loan. There's supposed to be one loan for your school and your boarding, and then I took out a separate loan. I didn't get a job at the time. I had a work study, but I still, you know, I would always go to buffets and stuff, and you know, I would always load up at the convenience stores, and so. And as far as the relationships, I would have a lot of crushes, but I was so, you know, I so hated myself. I think my top recorded weight is 403. I'm down to 240 now with my sponsor's help. But, yeah, at that time, there was no scales around either. So, you know, I just couldn't bear to look at myself and then imagine, you know, trying to have a relationship with someone is just impossible. I do have a fiance now, though, but so things are improving. But I just identify with the lone wolf idea. I appreciate someone, you know, sharing this morning about the defensive and snappy, because that's definitely me as well. I have worked the steps. I've gotten through the 12 steps my first time, and I've lost, you know, like I said, I'm down to 240 now, so from my top weight. But it's just, it's a miracle that this happened. I have to keep focusing on gratitude. Something somebody shared with me last night was pray for myself in the past. And it sends chills down my spine, so I just thought maybe it helped someone else. If I could think about God helping me in my past, I don't know. Maybe I could let go of some of the shame. Maybe I can let go of some of the blame. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rob H. And we have time for like a quick 1.5 minute share. Does anybody want to take that?
Hi, this is Suzanne from California. I'd like to take that share.
All right. Go ahead. I'll give you about 1.5 minutes, okay?
Okay. I just popped into the meeting just now, and so I didn't get to hear the earlier part of the meeting, but just got to hear the last few shares and wanted to say how much I appreciated hearing those. because I could totally relate to the person who shared about money that was spent on food and how, you know, making good money and I should be having a different type of life. But because this food had been so important, as well as how it also affected my relationships, because how I was feeling about my body has had a huge impact on my emotional well-being. And so I want to thank everybody who does service in this meeting. I want to thank, just so grateful for this program and for everybody's shares. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Suzanne. That will close us out. Thank you all for your shares and for being on the line. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Leslie M. to read a vision for you. Good morning, Leslie.
Thank you, Mo H., for your service. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.